are listening to the Punk News Podcast. We've got Street Punk Legends, The Casualties, on tonight. They've got a brand new album coming out this Friday. It's called Detonate, out on Hellcat Records. What better place for Street Punk than Hellcat Records, man? That's a pretty good pick. Let's kick it off with the title track, Detonate, and we will be back with David of The Casualties.
Yeah!
And we're back. David, thanks for coming on the Punk News Podcast. We are psyched to have you on. Listen, man, Detonate, it's the new album. I've heard the record. It's out this Friday. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm stoked.
Honestly, I'm glad you said that because I'm sick. Not sick, but I am annoyed and sick of artists saying, yeah, well, you know, we hope people dig it. I love it when artists say, yes, our record is great and we want people to check it out. I love because if you don't care, why should I care? So I'm glad that you care about your record, David, because I care.
Yes, I can go on. I'm going to go briefly because I know we're going to bust through as many questions as we can and talk about as many subjects. But I just want to say this. This is my second record with The Casualties. But I was in an old band called The Crumb Bums, and The Casualties used to take us on tour and brought us under their wing when we were really young. And it was one of the things that I always respected and I loved about them was they kind of took other bands out and kind of showed us the way. And we had a friendship back then, and it grew to this point where we started calling each other on holidays and meeting up in different spots and places. And then we got together. Meggers moved down to Austin, and I joined the band. We did the first record very quickly, but this one, it was a long time because we just did nonstop touring and COVID hit. But this was the time when just like everything connected, and we had so much fun fights, fun high fives, fun arguments and makeups and just the meeting of the mind immediately with this record. And we're stoked on it. And whatever the fuck happens when you put something out into the world that you love and you believe in, we already won.
Well said. And actually, I it looks like I'm going to be jumping all over this interview, all around this during this interview, because you brought up a lot of interesting things. One thing you said about is how you guys had fun making this record. And I definitely agree in that the record's got a lot of very serious political issues, you know, discussed. And we're going to talk about some of them. But the record, I mean, almost every song here is wham, bam. Detonate, the song's a minute and a half, you know. Most of the songs are just about 2 minutes long. There's a lot of wham, bam. However, there's a lot of, and this is definitely a street punk record. No question, it's a street punk record. But there's a lot of songs like on Empire Falls and maybe Ashes of War where we have slight deviations from street punk. There's some songs that are like a little bit of an acoustic interlude. There's one song that's got almost like a post-punk, almost noise section. You know what I mean? And so it definitely sounds like you guys are really just in the best artistic space, and that you're jumping around, having fun, and being daring with the quote formula. And so here's my question is is most street punk too safe in that it's just street punk, where this record is a street punk record, but we have, I dare say, Bowie-esque deviations from the formula. So my question is, David, go ahead.
I would love to think that we were Bowie-esque, but I'll say this, man, we kind of went all over and you know, the record comes out on Friday, so I know that one of the songs you're talking about is called "Eye for an Eye," and we kind of, you know, I don't think that we went out of the box. For us, this is just like our musical interest. And for me, now, my bandmates may or may not agree. I'm going to preface this that these are my opinions. I think we believe a lot the same. But for me personally, I don't give two shits about the term street punk. But here's the thing, though. We are street punks. We're from the fucking street punk era. And we're all just kind of dirty punks. And now, you know, fucking 20 years later for me, 30 years later for the band, it's like that when you live this and you love this, it never leaves you. So if the term is street punk, yeah. But to try to coin a term like, is this street punk music? By the 2010, people were trying to just make something that I'm street punk, and it totally watered down that vibe. But back then, you had a global threat, the Casualties, Clip 45, Crumb Bums, Endless Struggle. Each one of those bands sounded different, but they called us street punks. And I think maybe because of how we looked or whatever, but to coin that term, I always felt like it was very boxing, and I never want to be, personally, I don't want to be that. What I am is a dirty street punk kid that grew up this way. I believe in our beliefs. I believe in having an opinion about what the fuck is going on right now. I believe that you should always speak up for the marginalized people. I believe that you should speak about what's going on. And when I hear little shitheads say something like, don't bring politics into music, I think, oh, what a perfect life you must live, you know? And I always laugh. I go, your mother must be very proud of you. You know, like, you probably weren't raised that way by her. So, you know, it's a wild thing. And I got lucky. I grew up with an extremely strong mom and an extremely politically active dad. They were divorced, and I grew up with these very strong households. And when I think on it, all this punk vibe and ethics were smacked into me when I was a kid. There's a song says, you know, my father told me, fuck the police, never trust the government, and fuck the police. And I remember that. I remember driving down the street and my dad saying this.
And actually, you mentioned something pretty salient. I'm not saying every punk band has to be on political, and here's what I have to say. But you mentioned that, you know, there's these people that have been saying keep politics out of punk or whatever. Like, that to me is so, like, if that's like one of the, not the only thing, but that's like a core thing in punk rock. And it does come from a place, and I hate to use the word privilege, but it does come from a place of privilege. And a lot of people in America right now don't have the option to not be political just because just by existing, they're political. You know what I'm saying?
100%. And that's the word. Like, I'm so excited to be here chatting with you guys. I'm excited we had a single come out, and I'm excited about this record. I'm excited we're practicing our asses off. Everybody's in Austin. But that was the word I was thinking of. It comes from such a place of privilege. How nice it must be that you don't have to worry about this. You don't have to worry that family members might get deported. friends might get deported. Women's rights are getting ripped out, and you think that's funny. You're posting goofy memes about it, and it's ridiculous. I was watching the news, or all of this stuff on Instagram with this woman getting arrested in the airport. I'm driving to practice, and my eyes are full of tears, and I'm like unconsciously making fists, driving and thinking, man, what would happen if I just stabbed that dude in the eyeball with a screwdriver? That's how mad I am.
Well, speaking of people being mad, the record is called Detonate, what's, suggests combustibility. It's a very combustible time in America, but I was thinking about the word detonate, and detonate means intentional combustion. Detonate means something explodes or on purpose. So I'm curious what that track means to you, what that word means to you, and why that is kind of the sphere that surrounds the record.
That is the feeling that we have had recently. And sometimes when you're on tour, we'll talk about it. It's almost like we're in a time capsule. When you go on tour for long, long periods of time, sometimes you'll pop out and all these kind of things have changed. But with technology, we're in this bubble with our phones watching this news happen, and so there's been a lot of internal struggles that all of us have been going through, and myself, coming out of COVID, which was not that long ago, but right into another election with this ding dong as president, you get this depression that turns into anger, and it feels like we want to fucking detonate, And also, one thing amazing is Meggers, our drummer, wrote all the lyrics for this, and when he was reading them to us, we were just like, yeah, this is strong. This is how we feel, And we want this record to make people feel like that. Like, you want to blow up in the best possible way. Go do something.
So it's a positive call to arms, if you will. And actually, let's talk about that. Right now, there's a lot of real bummer things happening in America and across the world. But you're on the cusp of releasing a new album. So are you feeling positive? Are you feeling negative? How are you feeling? Are you feeling nervous before the record? How are you feeling about the state of the world? How are you feeling about the release of the new album? And how are you feeling personally?
I feel disgusted by the way the world is going and that we're standing by watching this happen. And I just wonder how much longer can things happen until it detonates, until something blows up, that's how I feel about that. About the record, we couldn't be more excited. This is our heart and our soul, and this is what got me through a lot of hard things when I was younger. This is what new records are, what get me through hard times now. And so I hope that this does for others what it does, what punk rock and, music it in general does for me. That's how I feel. What was the third part?
How are you feeling personally in your life? Are you feeling in a positive headspace, a negative headspace? How are you feeling as a person?
I feel like I'm not to sound stupid, but or silly because we're talking about it, but yeah, I feel like I want to detonate. I feel like a ball of energy that's dealing with everything that everyone else is dealing with. But again, what? Speaking of privilege, I'm privileged enough that I get to travel and voice myself in front of a large crowd of people. And I get to say, fuck Trump, every single night. I get to hold hands with people. We have people that come up and are crying about songs that helped them, about friends that have died with what they're going through. That's the privilege that I have. And to use that privilege to speak up for us. That's how I feel. I feel stoked.
I think one of the worst things that can happen during these, periods is when the people that are kind of fighting against or acting against, you know, the aggression and oppression of the far right or beyond the far right, is you can get trapped in a cycle of complaining and feeling down and feeling miserable. And I feel that is what they want. They want you to be miserable and feel worn out. You know what I mean? And so you kind of have to, you kind of have to balance like making meaningful political statements and taking action, but also still having fun. Do you feel that way? And how do you balance that? Because the fact of the matter is, even though casualties records are very political and very, you know, a lot of the songs don't have happy subject matters. Seeing the casualties is a lot of fun, David, especially with you singing. It's a lot of fun, you know.
You know, just to go backwards on that, it's like I always tell people, you know, you'll meet people out on the road and that have nothing to do with punk, and they'll ask, what do you do? Oh, I play in this band. We're playing up the street. Oh, I don't know anything about it. And I always tell them, you may not like this style of music, but I promise you, if you go to this show, you're going to have a good fucking time. You know, we get up and we give 100%. And way before I was in this band, I used to watch them and go like, dude, every show is 100%. And that's kind of the way that we are. You know, before we get on, we leave our bad times in the back and we just get up there and we try to smash the stage every night, you know?
We previously talked about how, you know, there was that quote, keep politics out of punk, which I think we agree is ridiculous. But like when Punk in the Park fell apart or whatever, some people were like, I just want to hear music and I want escapism, or don't talk about politics, you know, less talk, more rock. Do you ever get like people that come to your shows and they're like, shut up, don't be political, just play music? Do you ever get that? Or maybe you don't ever get that.
It's hilarious. We live in an age where this is funny. I'm a bit older and I come from a very gnarly scene where it was like when you talk shit, people will fight you, you know? And we live in a time where people with poor, they have no opinion on anything. They think that their no opinion matters, you know? And if you look at, you know, the internet and something is promoting our record, you're going to see a ton of people that have been with us and come to shows and they'll talk about how excited they are. Then you'll get a whole nother group that has no clue what we're about, who we are. We have the new song called Allies and Assassins that came out today. And somebody wrote, I bet the whole song says punks, 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 punks. And you go, you didn't even give it a chance. And then you kind of feel sorry for this person. It's like, he thinks he's very clever. He or she thinks they're very clever. They're on the internet voicing their opinion. And it's pathetic. And more than that is the people that tell us to don't bring politics up, or you don't know, you don't really understand immigration. You don't understand ICE. And I'm like, ugh, dude, I want to throw up.
Yeah. Well, I hear you. Definitely. Well, let's talk about something maybe a little happier. The new record is on Hellcat Records, which I think is a great home for the record. Is that exciting being on a Hellcat? And did you get to hang out with Tim at all?
It's something that's really, really fucking cool. Yeah, we got a lot of really rad time hanging out with Tim. Tim has been a supporter of the Casualties for, you know, 20 plus years, and it was something really cool. It was like we went into the studio to record and we weren't really even talking about, we were going to release the record on our own, and Tim came in and I think was having a lot of fun listening to it, and we had asked, you know, talked to him about like playing on the record, and we just all had so much fun. And again, if every person that was, if somebody was not involved, that was involved in making this record, the record wouldn't have turned out the way it did. There was a lot of there was just a lot of good hearts that went in there, and we produced something that we're excited about. And Tim said he wanted to put the record out, and Brett Gerwitz heard it and loved it. And it was one of those things. Those guys are two old school punk rockers that believe. They believe in punk rock. And it just, it reminded you of why we do this. And it's amazing. We're stoked.
Well, and speaking of old school punk rockers, you also have Vinny Stigma do kind of a spoken word type thing on the record, yeah. Which is cool. And what people forget about Vinny Stigma, I mean, you know, Vinny Stigma is Mr. Agnostic Front, you know, maybe first wave hardcore, but he's really from even before that, kind of like Harley Flanagan. He's first wave punk or beyond, before first wave punk. You know, Vinny's been around like forever. What's it like having Vinny on the record? What does that represent to you?
Man, that represents so many things. It represents the history of Casualties, where they're from, New York City, and it represents old school. It represents old school, new school, and like now school, you know? He represents what's going on, you know?
He's almost like a Roman avatar of hardcore punk rock. I've got one more question for him. I'm going to throw it to M, and then after M, ask you a question or two or three or whatever. I've got a few just random questions to hit you with, and then we'll come back and do the news. But my final, we'll say, official, important, deep thought question for you is, early on in this interview, you mentioned that I'm paraphrasing you. You said, "I speak for me. I'm not speaking for Meggers or the other guys." And, you know, I thought of Crass when you mentioned that, because people will say Crass meant this or Crass meant that. And I'm like, you can't say that. Usually when people say Crass meant XYZ, they really mean Penny Rimbaud means XYZ, because Penny Rimbaud, Eve Libertine, Steve Ignorant, even like Phil Free, all very different opinions on certain things. And Penny Rimbaud, yeah, and Steve, very different opinions. So with Casualties, is there a unified message? Or almost like the Clash, perhaps? Or is it kind of more like a Crass thing? It's like a bundle of intertwined messages, not all of which merge with each other.
Man, I would say that we're like an arrow. We're all shooting the same way. But how boring would it be if we all had the same opinion? Our opinions for what's right all go in the same direction, but the opinion of how to say it and how to speak about it, it can be different. And I think that's what makes a band like live and continue on. I've seen a lot of bands with great messages, and you know, it's like a political movement, bop, and it falls apart because you almost end up fighting about that same message. Whereas here, you know, sometimes maybe we even have a disagreement on how something should be taken on, and then we sit down and we talk about it and we're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And I think that's what makes, you know, I always use the term a tank. That's how this tank just keeps rolling and crushing, you know, over things that we hate.
Well, there you have it, M. The Casualties are both an arrow and a tank, moving forward with momentum and direction. M, any questions for David before I hit him with like two dopey questions?
Yeah, for sure. So off of the album, did you have a song that was the most cathartic to write and is the most cathartic to perform that just feels like that, like detonation?
Well, it's really hard. This is going to be the first time we're playing them live. We'll be this Saturday in England, and then we'll come back and play on the first in Austin. But we played the song Pigs on Fire in our Latin America tour. And man, it's hard for me to say, because really each one of these songs, it meant a lot to me. Like People Over Power, I mean, even in the line where it says it's simple, as simple as it sounds, that's about us. That's about us sticking together. Right now when the world is just eating itself and tearing itself into pieces, Detonate, talking about wanting to explode, Allies and Assassins, it's about, feeling marginalized and who are your friends, and we're dealing with our friends that are trans feeling scared with this political movement, and we're kind of saying we can be what we want to be, we can be who we want to be, and the people that are gonna that resonates to, they know we're talking about them, they know what we're saying, and that goes out to everybody that's scared about ICE. It's like people are scared to walk outside, so that's something that really is going to hit home, I think, for me is doing Allies and Assassins.
Yeah, it's so important to know that, like, especially now that there are people like in your corner, there are people who will like fight with you and, help you like survive and everything. So, like,
Yeah.
how do you feel like keeping that what can be done to like strengthen that sense of community?
What can be done to strengthen that sense of community is sometimes we have to shut the fuck up and listen, We have to hear what people say. It can be difficult. But a lot of things can be figured out if we sit with each other and we listen. And also, that's my real deep thing that I've been figuring out over years. And it sounds simple and easy, but it's not. Sometimes you have to just shut up and listen to what people have to say. And sometimes by letting them speak, you both realize you're a little bit wrong. And on the parts that we're right, we both connect on, And in the fun part of to answer that question is come out to the shows. Like everybody talks about punk is dead and this is dead. It's dead because you're at home playing on your phone. You're it, talking shit about bands that are working their asses off. You get together at a punk rock show with a bunch of people that are like-minded, and that's how bands are created. That's how movements happen. You get together and you share ideas.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that a lot of people kind of like overlook, right? And it's just like, oh, but the minute that you actually start doing it, you notice a huge difference.
100%.
John, what are your
Well,
last
yeah.
couple
I got
questions?
a couple of dopey questions for David, and then we're going to play a track
I'm a
and come back.
dopey dude. Bring it on.
So before David was in Casualties, he's been Crumb Bums. And I'm going to be a little vague here. Crumb Bums have a demo compilation that parodies another band's famous album cover. And one time, Punk News was going to do a parody of that album cover for one of the mixtapes we put out. And I reached out to the vocalist, not the bassist, but the vocalist. And he got very upset at the idea of us parodying that album cover. David, did you get any blowback from parodying that album cover, which people can Google if they want to Google that?
You know what? I cannot lie. During that time, I was a wild partier. So I don't even know what we're talking about.
Well, I'll just say so Crumb Bums have an album cover that parodies Cro-Mag's Age of Quarrel, and one of the Punk News mixtapes that we put out, the cover was going to be a parody of Age of Quarrel, and we came up,
Oh.
it was going to be called Web Page of Quarrel. That was going to be our parody, and I reached out to a certain vocalist, not a bass player who's cool, but to a vocalist, and he got very upset at the idea that we might parody, even though
No.
parody's done out of love, not disrespect, usually,
Yeah. No, you know what? With a lot of love to a lot of people, but every now and again, you gotta just calm down. It's not all about you, honey.
This question, is kind of before your time with regard to the Casualties, so I don't know if you have any input or not. Is one of my all-time favorite bands, World Inferno Friendship Society. They have a song called Jake and Edgar's Back Up Against the Wall. And you know, when I was looking at this record, I realized Jakin Eggers is Jakin Eggers of the Casualties. Do you have any run-ins or memories of World Inferno Friendship Society interacting with Casualties? Because
I
honestly, the song isn't necessarily, I mean, I believe World Inferno and Casualties mostly got along, but the song isn't necessarily complimentary towards Jakin Eggers, frankly.
No, it is. It's a loving song towards them, and because Mark Eggers, and it is, and I, from what I know, they were buds, and I know this, that now I could be completely wrong. I played in an I have another band called Starving Wolves, and we played with them, and the singer had came up to me and like gave me a big hug and was like, "Hey, I know you're in the Casualties. I love Jake and I love Meggers." And he gave me a big hug and he said, "Please tell the guys I say what's up." That's all I know about them, really.
Well, there you go. Jack Terrycloth being a class act as always. Last question for David, then we're going to play a song. David, how sensitive are you? If you get a good review, are you like, yes, that's great? And if you get a bad review, does that piss you off? Or do you not care? Is your psychic armor made of steel?
No, I am pretty sensitive. Like, I wouldn't say it brings me down, but I'm getting better at ego checking myself and going like, there's sometimes that I'm like, oh, I'm gonna rip this motherfucker to shreds. And then I go, that was the dumbest fucking review I've ever. And it didn't review the music. People come in to a lot of things with a already with what they want to say. Just like I told you, I bet the song says punks. Okay, dipshit, you didn't even listen to the fucking song. And we do that in life so much where it's like you're going to meet somebody that you're kind of have a problem with, and you go to wherever it is and you're already mad at them. You're not even going to give them a chance. So that's really, if somebody were to just say I sound like shit and they don't like my voice, I probably will carry it in the back of my mind for a while, but I also know, man, there's so many bands that I have respect for, and I don't like them. I don't care for the music. You know what I mean?
Well said. Well, I do like the Casters. I like the new record. It's called Detonate. It's
Me
out on
too.
Friday. And David likes it too. It's out on Friday. It's called Detonate. They are going on a massive tour. They're going to be in Europe at the end of this week. So by the time they hear this, they'll be in the UK on March 29th. You're there. Otherwise, the tour kicks off in April. Starts in Texas, runs out to California, runs up the West Coast, runs across Canada. So M can check them on out.
Hey.
Comes back down through New England, hits New York, Pennsylvania, then all the way down the East Coast to Tennessee. Then, wow, over to Wisconsin, Minnesota, and over to Colorado, Utah, and finally back in Colorado. Then in June, they're going to be back over in Europe, Austria, Germany, France, Czechoslovakia, no, Chechnya, rather, Germany, Poland, Romania, Italy, everywhere in Europe, Germany, France, Mexico. Oh, and then back to America in late summer, in Ohio, and then Mexico City. So it's going to be a full summer of Casualties. Definitely go check them out. It's an amazing live show and also awesome live show. The new record is called Detonate, and we're going to play one of the new tracks off it. And this track is called People Over Power. And we'll be right back.
The road, they shall get it down. You play down the end, they can never go. systematic change. Total transformation, degradation to the state. People over power, it's as simple as it sounds. Power over people and we burn it to the ground. People over power, people over power.
That was People Over Power, one of my favorite tracks from the album. Let's hit the news. We're gonna give David a little bit of a break while he relaxes a little bit, and we're gonna hit the news, and I'm gonna throw this to M, and then we'll throw it to Dave afterwards. M, big news in Afromance world. Big news,
yes.
In Afromance world. If the listeners, I don't even know if the listeners know at this point, Afro Man was a meme before a meme. In the early 2000s, he had this song called Because I Got High. And funnily, the song was actually an anti-weed song. He even mentioned that. It's like, I was going to do my taxes, but then I got high. Like, that's the song, you know. And then people kind of forgot about him, and he's been touring ever since. Well, 3 years ago, Adams County, Ohio Sheriff's Department had a warrant to raid his house, and the warrant was for drug distribution and kidnapping. And they broke his gate, and they kicked in his door and searched his house. And they didn't find any drugs, and they certainly didn't find any kidnapping victims, but they did find about $5,000. They bagged it and took it to the evidence. Oh, and also, when the police came in, they stopped and looked at his mom's lemon pound cake, which he had on in his kitchen. And they appeared to contemplate perhaps cutting themselves a slice, but they didn't. But they looked at the lemon pound cake. Afro Man goes to pick up his cash because there was no crime and he was not charged. And he even talked about, you know, he can kind of understand the drug distribution thing, that he's got lots of songs about weed, but he doesn't sell drugs, and he certainly doesn't celebrate hard drugs. But he's like, where did the kidnapping thing come from? Like, who's ever accused Afro Man of kidnapping? It was bizarre. And it was quite honestly, it was quite clearly kind of probably we want to run you out of town or cause you problems or whatever. And so he goes to the police station and gets his money. And what happens? The money is short.
$400 were missing.
$400 were missing.
No!
And the police said that, we miscounted the first time around. And so Afro Man was mad because they broke his gate, they broke his door, and they stole or lost his $400. And the fact of the matter is police are supposed to be highly trained professionals, so you're not allowed to make those kinds of mistakes, frankly, or you shouldn't be making those kinds of mistakes, you know. So anyways, he made a pretty funny song called Lemon Pound Cake, which honestly wasn't even that hurtful. It was really just, it basically said, the police raided my house, but they wanted to eat my mom's lemon pound cake, which is a hilarious song. Well, and actually I'm saying police, but I should be saying sheriffs. Sheriffs, actually, I don't know if in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, a sheriff and police are different things. And Ohio, but sometimes it's the same thing. We'll just say it's police. I don't know. So anyways, the sheriffs, I think it was 15 members of the sheriff's department, deputies, sued Afro Man for defamation. Defamation requires three things. An untrue statement communicated to four things. An untrue statement that a person reasonably believes, that's the second element. Well, actually, I messed it up. Defamation is four things, Em. An untrue statement transmitted to a third person that third person reasonably believes that damages the subject of the statement. That's defamation, okay? And frankly, in America, defamation is relatively hard to prove. And actually, it's even harder in England. In other countries, it's easier. But as far as proving defamation, there's a lot of leeway in America. So, like, I can say M. Moore is a jerk. That's not defamation because you can't prove what a jerk is. I can say M. Moore is – I can even maybe even say M. Moore is a thief, because what is a thief really, you know? I could say M. Moore has 19 aliens from Jupiter in her basement and she's beating them up, because no one would believe that there's actually aliens in her basement, because that doesn't make any sense, you know? What I can't say is I can't say M. Moore stole $400 from me, because that's an actual crime – or something that would cast dispersion upon a third party. That's the requirement of defamation, okay? And so the deputies sued Afro Man for defamation, and he went to trial just last week. And it was a three-day trial, and what blew my mind, during the three-day trial, he released a song called Randy Walters is a Son of a Bitch, and Randy Walters is one of the deputies suing him, which I thought was very bold. And in the song, he says, Well, he basically says he had sex with Randy Walters' wife, and during trial, they asked Randy Walters about that. And the bizarre part is Afro Man's attorney, and of course, M, what are the four elements of defamation?
It has to be a reasonable claim.
An untrue statement,
yep.
Communicated to a third person that is reasonably believed that causes damage, right? And
yep.
So and if you watch in this trial video, the judge, I mean, I you know, I've done trials before, and sometimes the judge is a little slanted. Here, the judge was so slanted in favor of the police, like I was kind of frankly shocked because like the defense attorney, which is Afro Man's attorney, he's like making objections, which are valid objections, and like the judge is overruling them. Like time and time again, and the judge is even arguing with the defense attorney. Anyways, so the defense attorney has this guy, Randy Walters, which frankly is not a great name. He's on the stand, and the elements are an untrue statement, blah, blah, blah. So Afro Man's attorney says to Randy Walters, "Do you know that Afro Man didn't have sex with your wife?" And his response was, "I don't know." and then weirdly the defense attorney almost like tries to like he's like, well, like, but you have a good belief that he did, right? And then the judge, like, he already answered the question, and it's like this weird thing going in reverse is where the plaintiff is making the case for the defense and the defense is trying to make the case for the plaintiff, and the slanted judge is defending the defendant. It's so weird. Like, and that really might have been what cost him this case. I mean, a lot of things cost him this case. But if you watch this video, it's hilarious. Like, honestly, most trials are extremely boring. This was not, it was bizarre. At any rate, the jury comes back and they rule in favor of Yellow Man on all claims. So Afro Man on all claims. So Afro Man beat the defamation in every case. And frankly, he did say some of the police officers were corrupt. He did say, he said Randy Walters was owed a drug dealer a whole bunch of money, which would be defamation. And he said he got fired from his job, which maybe he did. But also, the police had a lot of issues on their hand. Like, one of the deputies, his brother had been arrested for being a pedophile and went to jail. And so, like, Afroman called him, like, a pedophile's friend or something, which he is, you know. And so, like, Afroman, like, did all this research and, like, kind of showed that, like, pretty much all of these 15 deputies were pretty, pretty dirty characters, you know. And so, on the stand, Afroman, like, the plaintiff attorney and the deputies, I'm sorry I'm dragging this out, but you guys got to check it out. It's fascinating. They all had angry cop energy. And so the plaintiff's attorney says, "What gave you the right to say that Randy owed money to a drug dealer?" And he goes, "The same right." He's like, when they broke my gate and kicked in my door and went through my pockets looking for kidnapped victims, that's what gave me the right. And so Afroman just like walked all over them, and the defense attorney did pretty good too. So anyway, the fact of the matter is, Afroman beat the rap. The underlying story here is that if the deputies just ignored this, it would have went away. But instead, it totally backfired. They've made Afro Man millions of dollars in publicity here. I'm sure his guarantee has gone way up because of this. And Afro Man kind of played him like a fiddle. So the question here, Em, what lessons have been taken away from this? But also, Em, in the song, Randy Walsh is a son of a bitch, which is surprisingly catchy. And I've listened to the song probably 35 times. Hilarious song. But he says, "Randy Walsh is a son of a bitch. That's why I fucked your wife and got hella rich." Is it fair for Afro Man to bring Randy Walters' wife into this? Or is that sexism? I've got a definite opinion I can give you if you want me to give first M or
go for it.
So I feel as though that is a little sexist. First of all, where I come from, even if you've got an ultimate beef with somebody, you don't mention their family and you certainly don't mention their kids. Afro Man didn't mention the kids, but he did mention the wife. I feel that's a little low class. I feel he was doing such a good job of taking apart everything else. No need for that one line. And it doesn't even really make sense. But also, you know, maybe a little sexist. I can't necessarily exactly articulate why. Maybe it's because he's treating the wife as a possession that he's like, "I had sex with her, ha ha ha," you know? So I don't know if that's sexist. It feels a little sexist to me, you know? So I feel as though he could have done that one line differently and could have had as much of an impact. But that being said, I'm going to give Afro Man, I'm giving him half a grade down for that one comment. But the trial, the songs, there's another song called "Lick 'Em Down, Lisa," which is like a Barry White type number, which Oh my God, I couldn't stop laughing. I'm giving Yellow Man an A minus here, Afro Man an A minus. I think he should have changed that lyric a little bit, but I think he really goes, I think he really did underscore how corrupt, or if not corrupt, poorly trained police officers are. And I think his exact argument was right. He's like, you guys illegally searched my house and you're suing me to try to cover up what you did wrong, which the reason this is resounding so much with me right now is this is a microcosm, if you will. And we think that a microcosm, a metaphor of what's happening at the federal level with the federal government right now. And that's why it's resounding so much with me. Emma, what's your take on this track? What's your take on Afro Man's victory?
Yeah, I haven't seen the courtroom videos, so I just wrote that
Damn,
down
you
to
gotta
check them
watch,
out.
man. Oh my God, they're amazing.
This is like, oh my God, there's a lot going on here.
The best is when he's like, so you can confirm that Afro Man did not have sex with your wife. I can't confirm that.
Like, are they not married anymore, or like?
Well, there was an ex-wife. The only witness that defense called in their case in principle was one of the police officer's ex-wife, because the police officer was saying, my relationship with my ex-wife was damaged. And so they called the ex-wife and she said, no, it wasn't. It was damaged because he's a jerk, not because of what Afro Man said. So.
Awesome. I'm so glad Afro Man won this and, like pointed out all this stuff and like did it in a way that really like the songs and just everything and just went like all in on it. Also the full like American like suit in the courtroom in the video, everything. With the kind of oh yeah, I had sex with his wife thing. I have kind of I have a couple things. So like I do think it's a bit sexist because historically and currently like women's bodies are used as like weapons and are, like oh, I'm doing this to have power over you or have power over whoever and also kind of objectification. So I agree with you there. I think that takes the there's a mark off for that 100%. I do think it's really interesting though that because of that line there was the that exchange with was the, with the oh, do you really believe that he had sex with your wife? When it's like clearly he hasn't and he's just like I'm doing it for like the song and just to underscore stuff or whatever. But I do think that was just an interesting kind of thing where it's like, oh, really? You have to like say that, when clearly, but anyways, what a story.
David, how did you feel about Afro Man's victory? You support it or are you against it?
I support Afro Man and I support anything talking shit about police like that. They messed with his money. They had nothing better to do than to fuck with this dude. And yeah, maybe it was a little sexist to talk about his wife. Now, here's the flip side. The husband is probably such a sexist dickhead that he said this in defense of his wife in a very odd, weird way, just to piss him off. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he called her up and said, "Look, I'm sorry that I said this. They're lies. It's rude, but your husband is a cop and he's an asshole and he has small man complex. And if I say this, it's really going to set him off." And she might have said, "You know what, Afro Man? I appreciate that."
That'd be awesome, yeah.
Thank you, Afro Man. Well, listen, Afro Man, I would have loved to book Afro Man at a show, M, but I don't think I can afford it now. I mean, these police have literally made Afro Man millions of dollars. It's crazy. Here's one other thing. David, I'm interested in your opinion of this. I used to have a 91 Firebird, and I lived in California from the year 2007 to 2014. I had the Firebird from 2007 to 2010. I got pulled over 14 times, and I think I got pulled over 14 times was just because I had an old car and they kind of thought it was like a drug dealer's car. I noticed that I always got pulled over in quote relatively safe neighborhoods, but in areas where there was actual crime, I was never hassled. Have you found that to be true as well? In that the police officer where there's not much going on seems to be looking for more trouble than the police officer in the crime-riddled areas.
100%. Yes, yes, yes. I grew up and went to high school in a town called Pflugerville, which is kind of, you know, the name says it's for itself. It's like a podunk little area. And you would get hassled by the police like a movie, you know, where they would say something like, "Raw Greatest, you better watch yourself," at the movie theater. You know, there'd be a cop there and you're like, "How the fuck does this guy know my name? And what do you mean watch myself?" Like, there's all kinds of shit to do. Now I live in a not so great area. You can smoke crack walking down the street. So in my not so great neighborhood, and that's not like a joke. The cops don't look or care what's going on in my neighborhood at all.
Well, there you have it, David and John in agreement. Listen, Downtown Boys, we'll just do a quick one on this. Quite to my shock, Downtown Boys have a new record coming out. It's going to be called Public Luxury. It's out June 26th via Sub Pop, who put out their last record, Cost of Living. Last record came out almost 10 years ago. The listeners probably remember the first Downtown Boys record, which was called Full Communism, was a huge underground hit and an amazing record. And they put out the second record, which was a little bit more post-punk than punk. And for me, that record was a little bit more of a challenge. So I'm excited to see what is in wake for the third record. I don't really know what to expect from this. I'm frankly surprised they're still a band. They haven't put out a record in 10 years, and they played like maybe one show a year. I'm pleasantly excited, and I'm excited to see how this is. And Downtown Boys, do you have any feelings one way or another? What do you think we're going to get from this record? And what are you expecting? Will it bring Downtown Boys back to the public eye like they were way back in like 2015 or 14? Or will this just be kind of a record that comes out?
I am a big fan of Downtown Boys. I think a couple years ago, they were part of the soundtrack for a movie, and it was about a revolutionary, because they covered one of the songs. I'm trying to remember who it was about.
Didn't they cover like Talking Heads, but they did it in Spanish or something like that?
I think they did that too, but this is let me pull it up here. This is something different. This is it was a cover of L'Internationale, and it was for the film Miss Marks, which was about one of the do I have her name here? Yeah, Karl Marx's daughter. So that was in 2020, and I didn't realize that was that long ago. But that was just a cool thing that has come out kind of since the albums. But yeah, I'm very excited for this album. I really like the single and the music video that came with it. I think that it's going to get people talking again, you know, especially with like just stuff that's going on and like the musicians union stuff. I think more people are going to be paying attention. So I'm stoked. And so
David,
happens.
David, any Downtown Boys memories? Are you a fan? Are they new to you?
I am going to look into them. I do not know them. I've never heard of them. I've been part of the Downtown Boys in Austin, but that's it.
David, definitely check out the first record. Actually, technically it's their second record, Full Communism, and more. What's your recommendation for David's first dip into Downtown Boys? I say Full Communism, the record.
You can't go wrong with Full Communism. Yeah, okay. I agree.
I'll check that out, but I would suggest to them that they do like a cutout letter B and then like punk rock oi, so boys with the exclamation mark.
That would be cool.
If y'all are friends, just suggest them, you know, maybe if they need to pick it up a little bit, maybe they need a new branding.
Well, the Downtown Boys sounds like a good name. Also, I think she plays bass in the band. Her name is Mary Rel Galato. She had an amazing band called Clear Channel, and their first record, called Hell is super good, so check that out too. Okay, here's a fun story. Michael Graves, he's back. And now he's putting out Christian rock records. Of course, listeners surely know Michael Graves sang for the Misfits from maybe 1995 to 2000 or so. And then he quit or was fired. Actually, I think he was fired from the – I don't know. He quit or was fired. Who knows? He hadn't been in the band since 2000. Since then, he's been getting involved in the shenanigans, namely proclaiming himself a proud Western chauvinist and proud boy. And he was even at the January 6th insurrection. And actually, he testified before – was it Congress or a trial? I think it was Congress that he testified before as one of the January 6th guys. And actually, inadvertently, Punk News kind of wiped out of social media, which I actually feel bad about. Even though I don't like Michael Graves, I think he's a knucklehead. I feel bad in that when he did that Instagram post that said, "I'm a proud reference chauvinist and a proud boy," we took a screen cap of that, and the news story was Michael Graves says he's a proud Western chauvinist and proud boy. And we didn't even say, "And that is bad." We literally just reposted what he said. And then that kind of blew up on the internet, and it ended up him getting banned from Instagram because so many people filed a complaint against him or whatever. And he was mad at us about that. And, you know, I don't feel comfortable censoring or wiping out the online existence of other people. That wasn't my intention, but it was my intention to not expose, just let people know what his views are. Where was I going with this? Anyways, so anyway, he's back now. And so he actually has like a bunch of tour dates in a bunch of podunk towns. And he also has signed with a Christian music label, which, not that I need to explain the irony, but of course the Misfits, founded by Glenn Danzig. Danzig's way into Satanism and paganism, and he still is. You know, pretty much every Danzig track is about paganism or Satanism, including on the last album, Black Laid and Crown, which is about the devil's crown, if you will. And so it's kind of interesting that the guy that stepped in for Danzig briefly or for some time is now starting Christian rock. And I don't even really know if Misfits and Christian rock can be compatible in any context. I will say Proud Boys and Proud Western Chauvinist and punk rock is not compatible in any circumstance. Moore, is this going to be as terrible as we think? Is it going to be mediocre? Is it going to be great? And are you surprised by this move? Because, you know, a lot of these quote proud Western chauvinist guys and proud boys, a lot of them actually aren't Christian. They're either atheist or they're like way into the whole Burzum type paganism type thing. You know what I mean? So are you shocked by this, Em? I'm not shocked.
I'm not shocked by this at all because it seems like there's a huge, you know, handhold between kind of the Western chauvinist racist bullshit and Christianity, or people who are pretending, or people who are interpreting the Bible in a very, very bad, dangerous way. So yeah, like it seems like kind of any sort of conservative pundit or whatever that gets in trouble goes this route and goes into the, oh, you can't criticize me because I'm doing something religious and I'm doing something for God and everything. And it's just they're twisting messages to fit their bullshit. So I'm not surprised that he's pivoting to do this. I think it's going to be terrible.
David, are you a Misfits fan or are you a Michael Graves fan?
I'm a huge Misfits fan. I'm not a Michael Graves fan. I'm going to tell you something very ironic. Very ironic. Could Michael Graves just leave politics out of it? Dude, this I saw the first tour at this great place called Liberty Lunch in Austin. And yeah, I think it was 95. People were taking their shoes off and throwing it at him. And I felt bad. Like, maybe this guy's just trying to do what he can. And, you know, they're trying to do old Misfit songs. Okay. And who am I to talk about people stepping up in other singers' bands? But, you know, his, like, go all the way back to that Daily Show interview with him. It was just so stupid. He's always been stupid on top of stupid on top of stupid. And, You know, the paganism of these Proud Boys or whatever, that might be like 5% of them that have this, that look deeper into their racism. But most of these dudes are just dumbasses that were raised by dumbasses that were also raised by dumbasses. And I mean, to say I'm a proud nationalist, chauvinist, like what, how dumb do you have to be to say that? Like, just putting that up is like a poster for idiocracy. That's all I got to say about Michael Graves.
Well, as I've said before, were Michael Graves playing within an hour of me, I actually would go to that show because I really want to see who's at that concert, what's going on. Is it just a bunch of people that are just desperate for any Misfits content they can get? Or is it like a Klan rally? Or is it just depressing and sad? And it's probably all three of those put together.
I think
David.
you just want to see him do that stupid dance he does, like where his hands are like Tyrannosaurus Rex and he like jumps back and like he's being a, and he does it over and over. And every video you ever watch, he does that dance, and then maybe he'll have a top hat on. Now that's
David.
kind of a guy well into his age with two mohawks. So who am I to say?
David, it's a casualty show. We'll say eight Proud Boys show up. Do we yell at them and chase them out of the venue, or do we try to explain to them just how dumb they are and maybe you want to change your mind? What do we do?
The good, strong mind wants to say, like, hey, tell me what makes you feel this way? And don't give me any bullshit. What makes you dislike this guy right here, right next to you? Because you do. Don't come in here with this fucking bullshit. Tell me why. And maybe we could get an answer and maybe he'll start crying and take that dumbass shirt off. Or, yeah, maybe we just start kicking him in the ass. I don't know. It's hard. Life is
It,
hard.
life is hard, but let's hit two more stories. Here's kind of a heartwarming story. Al Barr left the Dropkick. Well, he stepped away from the Dropkick Murphys about 5 years ago to care for his ailing. I believe it was his mother, but somebody ailing in his family. And so since then, this who's the singer Dropkick Murphys? I forgot his name. The current one, not Al
Ken
Barr.
Casey.
Ken Casey has been singing,
Yeah.
and what's been kind of cool for me is Dropkick Murphys have become, maybe they always were, but they've become surprisingly political, and they've been stepping up to the plate when it counts, which I think is pretty cool. And so Al Barr recently joined them on stage for their big St. Paddy's Day show, and that was cool and fun, and people seemed to like it. And more, did you like this? Do you think Al Barr's going to be back in the band, or is this kind of a one-off thing, or what's happening with the Dropkick Murphys? And would you like to see that?
I was really surprised when I saw this. I thought it was really great. I hope like everything's going well with his like family situation and whatever, and if he's able to like get back on the road with them or just pop in on different shows, like, that would be really cool. He just looks so happy, in the video. Everyone just looks so happy, and it's just so nice to see, it's like these are things that mean so much, and they're there and they're together after who knows how long. I'm sure obviously they've been in touch, but like, it's very, very heartwarming. I think, again, hopefully everything's going well with his family, and I think if everything is, then he'll be back with the band, but I don't know when that would be.
David, what do you think is going to happen with Dropkick Murphys? One time only thing, or Al's going to be back? What do you, what,
First, I'm going to say Al is a stand-up human being. Ken is a stand-up human being. Each member of that band, stand-up.
do you have any Dropkick Murphys stories or memories?
I don't like. I've got. You know what? What I do have is Al Barr. Kind of just chatting with me online and being such a like really really a great guy when I first joined the Casualties, and also just about chatting with me about some positive life changes and Ken from Dropkick Murphys coming up to us at a festival and just supporting all the shit talking we do about Donald Trump. And for me, from a quote unquote street punk, that's awesome, man. It's great to just to see that. And I hope Al can do more with Dropkick Murphys. I know that he's just a great guy taking care of his family. And, you know, I think at this point, what's supposed to happen is going to happen.
Well, they very, very biblical statement, if you will. And check this out. Ready? And watch this. Dropkick Murphys used to be on Hellcat Records. Casualties on Hellcat Records. Now watch this. Dropkick Murphys, last time they played Philadelphia, they opened for the Misfits. And Michael Graves was the second singer for the Misfits, who was called and asked to be a singer for the Misfits before they asked Michael Graves but turned it down.
Al Barr?
No. Jack Terrycloth of World Infernal Friendship Society before he was Jack Terrycloth, and more, who produced the very earliest Casualties record.
He did.
Jack Terrycloth and Scott Hollingsworth. How do you like that, Em? How do you like
that's
that?
That's awesome. That's so good. All the connections.
There's a little known story that Jack Terrycloth was actually asked to be the singer of the Misfits or come try out. And he turned it down because he thought it would be inappropriate for him to do so. So there you have it. And if that happened, then we would never have World in Front of Friendship Society. Last story of the week. We touched on this last week, but we're going to touch on it again. Vinyl records have passed $1 billion in new sales in 2025, which is the 19th year of consecutive growth. And the highest year of vinyl sales was 1978, only $1.5 billion. So not that much greater than it is now, although, of course, with inflation, that'd be a lot different. But that being said, vinyl sale, real big right now. And actually, I'm going to throw this to David before I throw it to M, because David, for whatever reason, vinyl has always been popular in the punk rock world. And for whatever reason, even though Casualties aren't strictly street punk, vinyl, especially 12 inches, has been very strong in the street punk world since it started. How important is vinyl to the Casualties? Do you care? Or vinyl, CD streaming, you don't really care?
Vinyl is a bloodline for the Casualties. One, we all love vinyl records. Since I was a little kid, it was one of those things. Like, my dad would drop me off, you know, when I was like, I don't know, 11 or 12, and just let me go wild for like 8 hours. And I would go to record stores, and that's where I first saw like Misfits records and when Danzig first was coming out and L7. You'll never forget those, like, you know, the logo of the skeleton hands, one up and one down, and those oxblood boots and the Misfits wolf blood. And so those are like vinyl for punks is like, you know, first edition books. You know, this is history. You can go through and just listen to the change of times for that. And I'll tell you, you got to bring Jake on here. He is the most psychotic vinyl collector that I know. And with that being said, too, it's like we love doing vinyl. It's such a cool thing to share with people.
Well, you can definitely get the Casualties' new record Detonate on vinyl via Hellcat. And Hellcat/Epitaph always do a super-duper nice job with their vinyl records. Great sound quality. They look nice. And they're really well done. So check that on out. And more, are you psyched? Is the vinyl boom going to continue? Or are we near the end?
I think we're going to see it keep going for a little bit. Because, obviously it's always been... Or, no, but it's been... It's big in punk. You know, spheres and everything. I don't think that's going to change. I think it's going to stay very, very strong within punk. But seeing like Taylor Swift leading new album sales and like Sabrina Carpenter's album being up there and Kendrick Lamar and all this kind of stuff is like, it's good to see it be like embraced again by like more of kind of a mainstream audience or in different like genres. And whatever, because then it's like more people want to interact with it, and physical media is really great. I would like to get into vinyl. I have not. I like CDs, but there is something really special about having physical media and having it. You get to see the art and the liner notes and the lyrics and everything, and it smells good.
Well, you can smell the casualties with the new record. It's called Detonate. It's out on Hellcat Records this Friday. They also have, and there's David getting psyched, and I agree too. They've also got a whole bunch of tour dates coming up. You can check them out online. March, well, in Europe this week, this upcoming weekend, but then USA, April, all the way through May, and then over in Europe in June, July, and August. So it is the spring and summer of the Casualties. Detonate out on Hellcat Records. David, what song should we send him out with? You want to send him out with a Casualties song, a Crumb Bums song? What do you want to send him on out with?
You know what? Let's do Allies and Assassins because this is the day it came out. Again, I want to say thank you to everybody that's been a Casualties supporter and comes out to the shows. And if we can stick together, we can make good things happen. This record is about good things coming out of bad situations.
Well, they have an M. If we can stick together, we can make things happen. Wise words from David of the Casualties. Detonate out this Friday. Definitely go check it out. This is Allies and Assassins. And David, thank you for coming on the show, man. It's been a blast.
All right, thank you.
Burn inside in the black kettle flag.